Please call over choice.
Started, baby.
Welcome to the Art and Law podcast. We are officially starting at 7 p.m. We thank you all for tuning in, logging on. We appreciate you guys so much being here. This is the Art and Law podcast. I'm Ruddy.
This is Nadia.
And we are Art and Love. And just for those who aren't too sure, the Art and Law podcast, we just a young couple. We are friends. We know each other for a long time. We like to talk. So we thought it'd be best to take the show on the road. So now we're here on Facebook Live and we're just talking and chatting. We talk about various number of things. You know us personally.
Yeah.
You know, we can be very random. So this is no different.
We're on shuffle most days.
Very much so. So what helped us this season is to have guests. And guests allowed us to not be as random. So one of our guests now is going to be our closer guest.
Yes, she is our season finale. And what a better way than to, like, you've gotten advice from us. Or you've gotten our opinions. You've gotten, right. Because don't take us to the bike. But you've heard from other couples as well. But we thought it was very important to hear from somebody who actually went to school for this, who's actually experienced and licensed to give the advice that you may be looking for. Okay. And it's another avenue to explore yourself or who you are in a relationship. And so we brought on none other than Dr. E. Dr. E, could you introduce yourself, the audience?
Sure. I will try to do a good job with this. I'm Dr. Enrica Richardson. I am a licensed marriage and family therapist. And what that simply means is that I see clients anywhere from age 6 all the way up to over 70 on a variety of issues, whether it's individual issues like anxiety or depression, to couples issues, whether it's married, premarital, going through relationship issues, cohabitating, or even those people who are a part of families who are dealing with some family dynamic concerns. So I deal with a lot of variety of different issues on a daily basis. Not all, I will like to say, are diagnosable, because most people assume that every time you go to a therapist, you go because there's some extreme diagnosis. But a lot of the clients that I see, the families that I help, or the couples that I help are dealing with everyday life transitional issues and working through that so we can get them back to a healthier, happier, and more positive place.
Wow.
So again, this free advice will be given, right? We paid somehow. So we settled the bill later. But if you have any questions, no, that was a joke. If you have any questions, because we have our set questions, because a lot of persons email questions prior to.
Yes.
But if you have any questions, please drop them in the chat. We'll do our best to integrate them into the conversation. And let's hear some conversation going. So, Dr. E, before we get into our questions, just let us know. Just let us know how you got into therapy.
Yes.
Oh, okay. So actually it started, I think I'm the only person potentially that I know so far who has known their major from I went to undergrad and it's never shifted. And I say that because most people, when they go to college is a time of exploration where they go through 2 or 3 majors to figure out, is this really my thing? I remember the conversation the day I had with an aunt on a drive home from, she was like, what are you going to major in school? And I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to college. And so she was just like, well, if you ever thought about psychology. And so it's now, I guess this is where you start to age yourself and you're like, what is psychology? Because back when I was in school, we didn't talk about psychology. It was not a part of the regular curriculum. When she told me about it, I fell in love. I fell in love with the fact that she was like, it's a profession where you can help people and people will talk to you. And then she was telling me more about it. And I started looking into it from that night. And that was my major. And I've always loved it. And it evolved from just clinical psychology to more marriage and family therapy when I got into my doctoral program, because that line of thinking aligned more with my personality. And because marriage and family therapists see the world very systemically, meaning that everything is interconnected. And it comes from a much more of a holistic perspective, a more positive mindset, whereas some other lens of mental health look at it from more of a medical-based model. And so it just fits. And
okay,
we've been in a relationship ever since.
The beautiful thing about that, and I'm glad you did it, because now we have this conversation.
Right.
Mental health has been a buzzword within the last, I think, our generation, especially our generation. People are more aware that that's a aspect of life you need to now develop.
Yeah.
However, being how we are in the Caribbean, in the Bahamas, we tend to be 1 to 2 steps behind America as relates to trends. How has it been taking what you've learned there and dealing with the market in terms of openness of clients and just people wanting to talk about their mental health and their relationships?
I can honestly say in the last year, it's the first time I haven't gotten the, oh my gosh, I didn't know therapies existed in the Bahamas. And I've been back home in my practice back home for at least, 5 to 7 years now. And I don't know if that's just due to COVID. But what I found is that once people are aware that there are mental health professionals here, licensed and trained mental health professionals, that they have been open, they have been interested. And me and my colleagues are saying, we've all been a little overworked over the last year or two, we'll say that. And we're excited about that, not from a financial standpoint, but for the fact now that people are now taking their mental health seriously in the Bahamas. And I say the Bahamas because my clients go throughout the archipelago. And so that is the great part now with everything, that it gives you access to a clinician, even if they're not directly on your island. So I have clients throughout the whole Bahamas. And the more people are aware that they exist here and somebody also who can relate to them from growing up in our cultural context, it adds even more value to it. And so the leading population, believe it or not, coming to mental health professionals is the young adulthood group. So anyone from about 25 up to about 45 right now are leading the pack with who are coming in for services.
Right. That's it. You're more, I would like to say that you're more aware that mental health shouldn't be something that is stigmatized, but like that is as serious as your physical health, if not more.
Well, I'm going to be biased and say it is, because if your mental health is in a decline or it's getting to a point of fatigue, your physical health is automatically going to decline. We can't say the opposite.
I agree.
And so we know that the mind and the body are completely connected. And so once the mind starts to deal with itself, the first place it shows up, and this is why most people go to a medical doctor when they have anxiety issues, because it starts to come in some physical symptom like upset stomach, nausea, sweating, or heart racing, heart palpitations. And so they go to a doctor to figure it out.
Stop talking about me, you know?
But and the doctor then says, I'm not the right doctor. Like one of my clients calls me, you need to go to your talk doctor for that one.
Ah, I like that. Your talk doctor. Okay.
Any questions?
Yeah. Donovan says, get your mind right. And I mean, it's so true. It's very important to get your mind right. Like, I just thought that was something. Right. that Jay just used to shout at you. But honestly, like, you know, once your mind is in a good place, your body will follow.
Yeah. Your life, and that's why most people, and I've seen Jay post about this a lot of times, and he and I are completely on the same page with this. This is why most people fail at health plans, because they automatically assume as if I get out there and I go work out and I eat well, that's just going to shift everything. But it starts in the mind first, because if you don't shift your mentality about how you feel about yourself, how you project, how you want to see yourself look, and start to live that life, those things aren't going to last very long. They won't have sustainability.
No. Okay. Well, okay. So these questions are great. Let's get into the meat and the potatoes.
Okay.
There was some questions that came through that we had to really pull out. That was a lot of interest.
Curated.
Yeah, curate. so that it could be appropriate for the podcast today. So we'll start with the first one. What would you say to the individual or couple that were brought up not to take advice from a single person? So does this play a role in how your clients chose you?
Okay. So I think it's two parts to that. And one where I'm going to try to be as ethical as possible because I try not to live my personal life to my clients. So I think that advice, which kind of came down from generations, is the idea that you want to be mindful of who you're taking advice from. And I'm not sure if labeling just a single person or a couple person is the best answer. And the reason I say that is because I know there are just intelligent people, and we have to differentiate the two, because I know some married people who should never give advice to anybody. And then I know some single people whose advice is so sound because they've done such good introspective work that they could look at things beyond the subjective stance of themselves. Yes. So I think that it really should come down to the end of the day is, When I go and I say I trust this person to give me advice, why do I trust them? Because we tend to go to people we trust for particular reasons. Either they provide us safety, they provide us emotional support, or quite frankly, they give us the answers we want to hear.
Right.
And so I think that's more important for us to ask ourselves than whether or not the person is single or attached. Because like most of my married clients say, and they say it all the time when they come in, I don't know if I tell a single person to get married, right? And then I have the singles who come in and be like, I just want to get married. And so when I look at it like that, then is it really the status of the person that should be giving out the advice?
Right.
Or is it the person who can look at things very much objectively and give the person, no matter what is going on, the best possible advice? And then the other part to that question was the idea of, and again, no matter who's giving you advice, you must filter. You must filter the advice, because we all have that. I call it, we have that one really good person in our lives who's always going to be so supportive, but they can't sometimes give us the hard advice because they always want to be the protective person. Mm-hmm. But then that person is very good in times where we're feeling very low, and they're the person who's going to build us up.
Yeah.
Should you go to that person when you probably need a swift kick? It's probably not the person to go to.
Right.
So I think it should depend on what you need at the time. I think that should really come to it rather than looking at the person's stance. And I think people want to assume that because people have the same similar lifestyles that they could share and appreciate the same similar experiences. But what I found is let's say I have two couples married around the same time, living the same course of life, around the same age group, having different life experiences. Would I offer both of them to share advice? Not necessarily. Because they can offer it for some information, but the couple then has to be able to decipher that. And what I find is that a lot of people don't know how to do that. So you have to be very mindful, even in yourself sometimes, as to, am I taking this person's advice more because I consider them successful? Or am I taking this advice because of their status? And I think that should offer a lot of questions. Because I'm sure if people come talk to you after you guys had a little fender bender of an argument, it's probably not the best time to ask y'all some questions. Versus when y'all are in a very good state and things are going really, really well. And that's just because the nature of human beings. So I think it comes down a lot of times to that. And filtering it, no matter who's giving it to you, because I think we want to make sure we're just going to people who have the best intentions for us and for our success. And so I tell people, when you go to get married, the people you really should be inviting to your marriage, not are the friends and the family and the friends of the family and those people, but the people who are going to be supportive to the success of your relationship.
Yes.
Especially when there's no glitz and glamour involved.
She making sense. Okay, all right. So in the comments, right, Taria says people need to be made aware that there's more to mental health and therapy than the extremes like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. We totally agree with that.
You're crazy if you need to see a therapist. just go to the expert. Just like, yo, and I think health is the easy thing, analogize to it. If you are not pleased to just think, you go to someone to help you.
Real
time. You don't wait until the doctor got to cut off your leg before you see a health specialist. Same thing with derby. You don't wait until you want to count long poles.
Yes.
Before you go see a
specialist. Like, why should I
I'm biased. I tell people, so every year you go for a physical, you're supposed to, especially when you get to a certain age, every year you should go for your mental health check-in. People don't see it the same way, though. By the time they tend to come to a therapist, because you ask the other part of the question is, like, how does that play a role in who and when people choose somebody? Usually people then come to the therapist when things have hit the fan, and then they want to fix. They want to fix it right away. And what I tell people is that I would love to help you do that, but it depends on how long this thing took, because it might have been cooking for years. And how open you are to dealing with maybe what has happened, because it's the other part. Sometimes we think we're ready and we're not ready yet. And so that could also impede the process of it. But I think it's better to start than to not start at all before it really gets to a place where it's out of control.
Okay. Another question that's in the chat is, it seems women care more for their mental health than men do. I don't know if that statistic is global or also here locally, but how do you encourage a male to seek mental health help, specifically husbands?
Well, believe it or not, the trend I've seen in the last year is there are more men coming to therapy than women. I've been surprised, because women have been the number one consumers of therapy since its inception. But in this last year, in our country, let me be very specific, men have become the number one consumers of therapy from my data. Now, I'm sure, I can't say whether or not that will stay a steady trend. And that started to also worry me on the other end as to why are women letting their mental health slip? And now the men are stepping up, which means too, when I see it as a relationship system, if you have one person going and getting help and the other person not, then you start to see disparities growing within relationship dynamics, where people start to grow apart, or you start to see more communication issues because they're communicating on different levels. And so I think to encourage anybody to come, we have to do it in a non-judgmental way, because by the time we tend to tell somebody, hey, I think you should look into this, we say it into, this is your fault and you need to go fix it.
Yes.
Versus, hey, I don't think we're doing so well in this area. What do you think about us doing that? Language is very important in how we perceive everything. So if you use language to me that makes me go in defense mode, the first thing I'm going to do is I put my defense mechanisms up and I'm ready for you. I'm fighting now. And so we really have to learn as units to stop fighting each other and fight the world, because you already have enough stuff outside of the relationship dynamic. And so we have to be mindful how we're speaking to our partners when we're trying to encourage them to do something that can be beneficial. And it may mean the first time you go with them, you say, hey, I notice I've been falling off on this. Would you come with me? And sometimes it's doing it that way. And then the person starts to realize, and that actually happened the other day for a couple I had, where the husband wasn't ready to come in by themselves. And the wife had been coming in, and the wife encouraged the person to say, hey, come with me to a session. And I was able to ask the husband questions about the wife. And then it ended up, that became totally his whole session. I don't think she got in maybe like 5 words after her intro, because
he was ready to talk.
He was ready to talk. And he wasn't yet completely ready to do it by himself. And then, of course, the next time he came in by himself, but again, your partnership. So come with your partner, because if they fall off, you fall off. It's not them by themselves.
Okay. So that leads us into our next question then. We had a user submit a question saying, well, listener submitted, what are some activities or behaviors that married couples should practice at home? Like, you know, some people suggest that we do like stuff like date nights or communication exercises or something like that. What do you suggest married couples do at home? What are some
standard practices? All of the above. Constantly do. So I always tell people, if you are in any type of committed relationship and you're not willing to do work, you're not willing to be in a committed relationship, not a successful one. And so what I always suggest for married couples, they should practice at home, especially that we've been in this pandemic now for a year and possibly going into our, finishing out our second year of this. You have to be creative. You can't go out the way you used to. Finances are pretty tight. And so you have to think about how you're spending them. So you have to use the resources around your four walls, and you might only have a little efficiency, but you got to figure out how to make it work. The cutest thing I saw the other day, I think it was on Instagram, where this couple made a fort. Right.
I saw it too.
I thought it was the most adorable thing, because we all have pillows and we have blankets in the house. And I'm sure you got some old Christmas lights somewhere. And instead of eating food at the table, why don't you eat in the fort? And it's just like changing things up. The regular things you do to create a different mood, different atmosphere, to increase the intimacy, which increases the connection. I definitely think there should be date nights. And my rule is, I always tell couples that there should be a minimum of 2 date nights a month. And that's on minimum, right? And that is 2 times. And it's not family time. It's not relationship business time. This is fun time together. I see somebody hiding. And that is the time where you two sit and have laugh and giggle. If that is playing a board game, that is teaching something to the next person. If that is doing a project together that is fun. If that is sitting down and getting 2 ice cream cones and people watching. I know I like the people watch. I tell a whole story.
Boss Simon, good.
He's loud. People watching the eyes get shame.
That's the whole Boss Simon. That's a skill I have. I create whole scenarios. I just right.
I mean, how else are you going to make it fun? But the whole idea is that you're trying to find activities to do together that increase communication. And then on top of it, we don't have to think by ourselves anymore. We have the whole world of Google and YouTube University to come up with great date night ideas. I always say that. And Pinterest. Pinterest is awesome out there for like games and other things to do. And so what I'm saying is that couples have to be committed to fun part of it. So twice a month. And I think it should be rotated who's in charge of the date nights. Because we have this idea that only one person should be doing the work. No. So I have my couples automatically rotate it. So if, let's say, Nadia, this is your month, you would be in charge of the 2 date nights. You'd be also in charge of planning, executing, and paying if the dates cost money. Uh-huh. And on top of that, let me add the other part. You have to ask Rodney out. Not just say, hey, put on some clothes, it's Friday. No.
And you know it's Friday.
Why you ain't ready yet?
Just how you want to be romanced. He wants to be romanced too. And I don't know what we do. We underestimate the fact that, you know, guys want to be wanted too. You say it to him in a nice way. And you show him how much you need him and want him.
Yes. Okay. Cool.
She's good.
Yeah. She's like, I'm here like, ooh, slash is about to fall off. I'm tearing up. Okay. All right. A question that we just got anonymously was that,
Hey, Juliana.
What are some advice for married couples who may be in a long distance situation to help keep the intimacy going?
Virtual date nights. Virtual date nights. It is very creative. It can happen. I've been on a few. So you do it just the same way you would do a regular date night. You would plan and you'd execute and you would dress up the same way. And with the world has taught us now is that we have to really start thinking outside of the box. There are ways and apps now where you could send food still to the same person. You could send them little treats. You plan it. You set the time together. And what you have to do.
That was great.
You could actually order the food for the person.
You could send them flowers. Yeah.
Oh, that's really good.
Okay, I like that one. All right.
We no longer have excuses anymore in the world of technology to say we can't make things happen.
Yeah. Even over here now, so we can deliver food.
Yeah.
So we really ain't got no excuse.
No, none at all. Okay.
Shout out to Craven. They're not responsible. They're not
really good. Yeah. The other question that we had was, when is it time to see a therapist? So this isn't necessarily relationship based, but however you want to take it. Okay. When is time to see a therapist?
From 6 to 7 plus are using
I always tell people that I think it's time to see a therapist when you start asking yourself that question. And I think that when you start to reach into adulthood and you start to find yourself having a lot more questions and it's taking you some time to figure out some of the answers, that's another good time, because adulthood is that transition where we no longer are listening to everybody else, but we're trying to hear our voice the loudest. And sometimes we need to do that by having that non-judgmental sounding board, which you get through your therapist to help you work through some of that stuff. It's also the time where we're in these very intimate relationships and we're playing out a lot of our childhood traumas in those intimate relationships, but yet we want them to be successful. So that's another time where we want to do this, because we don't want to yet go out and possibly then marry that person. And then the stuff really starts to hit home and you're just like, well, we can't go nowhere anymore. And so if we're working on it all along, and you don't have to be in therapy for life. I think people have this, TV is good for one part and TV is horrible for another part of the exaggerations and the stigmas. So most people who come to therapy, I say it, come for normal life adjustment issues. They're going through a transition. Maybe they're switching careers. Maybe they're about to think about married or having kids, or maybe they are thinking about moving or something. Going through a breakup, those are all times that you may want to seek somebody out. And you don't have to stay in long. Most traditional therapists now are very short term. So you may come in for a couple sessions, stop, and then you come back in again when something else you want to talk about. And so it's all about building a strong relationship with your therapist so that you feel connected, vulnerable, do what you need to do, and go on your way.
I like that. I like that, because you would normally think that, okay, well, first of all, as you said earlier, like, you think that there's this huge diagnosis, right? So I need to come in. She's going to diagnose me. Then we're going to work through that, and then I'm done. But the problem may be, it may be as simple as that. It may be something that is ongoing. But then once I have a continued relationship, I can come in and come out because we already have this relationship built. And I like that. You know, it's not necessarily you must do 12 sessions. We need to address this issue. How that happens is up to what we unearth, eh?
Yeah. How deep you are, bro?
Yeah.
So Julie answered yes.
Okay. Ronnie has questions, but Juliana has a question in the chat. She says, "What's the best way to manage new changes in relationships, like when dynamics are new for both husband and wife, like parenthood, or?" For first time. I was just about to say,
One of the things I think is that most people I've found fail to have conversations about the major issues in life. So the questions you would have had initially, we start to assume that we have the same answers because we've been around each other for so long. And I think you guys can speak to this. No matter how long you've been around each other, you're learning stuff on a constant basis and things change over time. Maybe you encounter a new book that you read something that you want to try, or somebody else has offered you something and you looked it up. And so I'm saying that to say, for new couples navigating through big changes, it's time to have a conversation about it. And a conversation that is ongoing. And I say ongoing because if you have the conversation today, then allow yourself another conversation follow-up, let's say in 3 months. Because some stuff you might have learned in those first 3 months and you say, okay, well, can we now implement this? And let's do it again. And maybe now we could do it again 6 months later. So now we're probably into about a year of this. And so you having these chats, because as you evolve, you want to keep the room open for conversation. When we have a one-stop conversation and then we want to change something, then the person is like, well, why are you changing now? Versus having an open door that says, hey, if something comes up, I'm going to be flexible. Let's sit down and talk about this again to see where we're both at with this. I deal with a lot of couples with this because somebody wants to have this particular person watch the kid. And the other person's like, well, I'm not really too comfortable with that. And so maybe your mom was nice to us initially, but I don't really want your mom watching our child. And that becomes a conversation piece. but we have to be open and respectful of both persons' decisions in this. And I also think with a lot of couples, they have figured out who's going to be the default last person on a particular task, so that that person then makes the final decision because you trust their judgment, even if it's disagreed upon in the conversation. And because you know it's the greater good of the couple is more important than the individual needs. So I think that the couple must have a conversation about it. And maybe the first conversation doesn't go so well, and if it gets too heated, then I suggest you walking away and say, hey, let's address this again, maybe tomorrow in a few days. Let's think through this some more. And maybe in that next conversation, write out particular questions that you want to have answered so you can have a more structured conversation. Mm-hmm. And so that could be another way to have it so that you can try to navigate through it yourself.
Like, does she take Atlantic Medical?
I don't really, like, I really find out.
Anyway. So go ahead.
I know. I came across a video in a WhatsApp group online, and the lady, well, it's a video of post, and the lady was like, if he doesn't love you the way you need to be loved, you need to move on. And it sparked the conversation to say, or if he doesn't know how to love you, like how you want to be loved, it sparked the conversation to say, well, I don't know how to love you. Doesn't mean I don't want to love you. Mm. Speak thus to the importance of experimenting, teaching people how to love you.
Okay.
But before you start, Juliana says thanks. Really sound advice. I tell she making sense. Why do you think we brought her on?
Yeah.
Y'all need to see her after this. Don't worry about it.
When it comes to the love question, I always tell a person, and I start at an individual level with this first, is that you can't expect somebody to know how to love you if you first don't know how to love yourself or how to communicate the love you need. We have this idea that when we're in this relationship and we have this kind of simpatico with the person, that they should automatically know how to do these things. They should finish your sentences, know your thoughts, figure out what you want to eat. And I don't know yet any couple in history that has worked for, but I'm willing to be open to that one anomaly somewhere in the world. So what I'm saying is that you have to be able to communicate that. Now, if you're saying after you've understood what that means for yourself and how you feel about that and how you then communicated that successfully with understanding to your partner, and then they still don't do it, then that is probably not the person for you. And I say with understanding is because where the one of the biggest pitfalls to communication is that we say a message to the receiver of the message. We automatically assume the receiver got the message because they nodded their head, and then we go on. And half of the times, a head nod does not indicate understanding. So we must then make sure, and this is why we practice a lot of speaker-listener techniques in therapy, it is after I send you the message and you nod your head, now tell me what you just heard me say. Because half of the time, you weren't completely or actively listening to me effectively. So you got maybe a fifth of what I said, and then you're trying to respond to that fifth. But and I feel so empty because you left out that other four. Like, so I feel like you don't listen. And that's when we get that, you don't listen to me. And so, but the communication error is really on the side of the sender, because if a receiver doesn't understand the message and they don't comprehend it, it's not on them, it's on you.
Exactly.
Because your job was to make sure that they understood. They didn't just listen to you, they understood what was being said. And mm-hmm. So this is usually one of the biggest pitfalls in communication. And so if I could then communicate that with you, you understand and you acknowledge and you say it back to me and you say you get it, and then you still don't do it, then you obviously aren't interested. And I have to be honest with myself. And I think that's usually the hardest part for us to realize, is that sometimes we could be with a really good person and they are maybe doing some of the efforts, but it's really not what we need. And sometimes the hardest decision is to say, well, I need more than this, and I'm not being picky or I'm not being gold diggerish. I'm just needing what I need. And I know this makes me happy. And so maybe this can't work for us.
Okay. All right. Yes. Okay. So, wow. Child. Okay. But yes. But one of the questions that came in was, can, and I think this is a big one, and it's a question everybody is going to ask, right? Can marriages bounce back from infidelity,
yes, abuse,
or neglect?
Abuse, I'll say neglect, yes. Okay, so let me go through each of those because they're not all the same.
Okay.
Most people always assume that the number one reason relationships end or end with divorce is because of infidelity. That's actually not true. The number one reason relationships end is financial reasons. So most people get divorced due to financial recklessness, financial secrets, and anything in between that. That's usually the number one reason most relationships end due to divorce. Infidelity usually comes in as probably a 2 or 3. And that is because most people can work through an infidelity. Because like one of my greatest colleagues says, Esther Perel, that the victim of the affair is not necessarily the victim of the marriage. Let me repeat that. Victim of the affair is not necessarily the victim of the marriage, which means that even the person who cheated, yes, they may have cheated and they're wrong for cheating, but they're not necessarily the reason the relationship went into its demise. Because we like to assume they're one and the same, and that's not necessarily true. And most people have a hard time swallowing that because we get so caught up and fixated on the person who committed the affair that we don't ask ourselves, how are we contributing to the fact that our relationship is at a place where somebody thought or had an option to or even had eyesight for another person? And again, this is not a victim blaming situation. Let me explain that before someone gets in their feelings.
Because I can feel it coming somewhere.
So there are relationships that start to go way downhill if people are being honest about it way before the affair happens. The affair just makes it an issue that we could actually say that this is the issue. Because okay, when I go back and I ask couples about, tell me about life prior to you finding out about this, and they're telling me stuff like, we really don't talk much, we don't really do much stuff together. So when you look at the series of things about the relationship, there really wasn't a relationship. And I think that's the hardest part for couples to get through when we look at the repair of infidelity, is because when we take the infidelity out of the equation and we put the spotlight on the relationship, then we start to see all the other little holes.
Okay.
And so sometimes this is why it's so important to have these conversations. And this is why most people could work through the infidelity, because they realize that the infidelity a lot of times is a result of one of those issues. Now, don't get me wrong. There are just some people who aren't supposed to be in relationships, but you always have your outliers. Let me just say that. You always have your outliers. But what we found more often than not is the infidelity is an after effect to other stuff. It's not necessarily the thing that starts the catalyst for things, believe it or not, when we look at the research in infidelity. And okay, this is why most people work through infidelity, because when you start to look through what other stuff are happening and you realize that how we both contributed to where our relationship's at and ways in which we try to repair and work through the communication, most people then are committed to fixing and enhancing the marriage. Okay. When it comes to abuse, especially when it comes to any type of intimate partner violence, I think that one is really a 50-50 to say that people work through it. And I say that because there are some people who will genuinely, and I would say this very loosely, like they might have lost it for a minute. Mm-hmm. They are very much remorseful, would do anything, and genuinely will never hit another person or or hold them or shake them or whatever it is that they do. Again, they just like got out of themselves.
Yeah.
And then there are other people who unfortunately grew up in a system of violence, and that is their way of loving and showing love, and they know no other way. And in those situations, it is unanimously said that you do not want to be in this relationship with this person because you're subjecting yourself to be prone to another violent attack. And so it's one of those gambles that sometimes people have to go through. Would I recommend it or not? And honestly, it has to be on a case-by-case basis, because sometimes we've all done some one-off things that when we look at ourselves, or we looked in the mirror, we'll never do those things again. And we're genuinely sorry, have done everything we can to repair it. And then there's some of us who have no remorse, right? And we'll do the same behavior again. And I think it comes down to that when it comes to any type of intimate partner abuse. When it comes to neglect, that is something else that can be repaired. And the reason it can be repaired is because you start asking and communicating about needs and wants within the relationship. And when you start to communicate with that, and both parties are willing to work on those, then you start to see there's an opportunity to repair, because neglect usually comes out because maybe we're so caught up building the house for the family that we forgot that we actually have to have a family to put in the house. And so we need to retrain and refocus and be a little bit more flexible with the plan. And that can help. And other times, it's maybe a missing communication. So I guess the only one for me on that list is probably a little harder to say if it can't repair is the violence one. Because there are some of us who can't recover from something like that, and it's understandable.
I don't want to speak to like generational issues, but like I've seen from what I know, like, you know, you hear the stories of what your grandparents put up with, or, you know, the people before that time, you know, a lot of persons put up with certain behaviors and said, you know, stick it out and save your marriage and blah, 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 blah. But
keep trying to get up,
right. But I don't necessarily think that that mindset was definitely healthy.
No. I guess I'm saying that is no. So when we look back, I heard somebody, I was reading something the other day about this. They were saying that generations before had less divorce, and they are absolutely correct. You know why? Because the economic situations were different. The level of tolerance was different. The need for survival was more important. I think we're in a generation now where just like our parents will stay at a job for 25 years that they absolutely hate, going to the same job every day and coming home and being not the nicest people in the world. Our generation is not of one to stay. The average job for our generation is to have at least 5 jobs within a 5-year period once you start working, because the moment the job doesn't have a need fulfillment for a millennial, there's no interest in it anymore because it doesn't serve you. Uh-huh. And I think the same thing happens with relationships. And it doesn't mean that we necessarily jump ship on the first sight of something when it comes to relationships. That's not it. It's the fact that we've learned that we're not going to subject ourselves to the same harsh treatments that our parents have subjected themselves for the idea of an image, for the idea of survival, because we've learned now how to do those things from a more of an individual level. And so some of the things that, and yes, I still hear those stories, believe it or not. I still have clients who have been told that they need to get married because they got pregnant, or they... Yes, I'm talking in 2020 with the most recent story I've heard of that. Yes, I'm dead.
I was going to ask you that. Well, you must know I was going to answer that question.
Yeah.
Like, we still doing that?
Yes, or a client who I had whose mother told her that, well, he only pushed you once. That's okay. You know, like, you all could get through that.
That's
anyway.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Bye.
So to that then, I know you mentioned earlier a lot of persons talk to me, essentially just said right before marriage, right?
Yeah.
So definitely. To that person who doesn't have the bad advice, because I don't think it'd be bad advice. And they're trying to get themselves together, speak to us the importance of making sure you are right first before you then try to put yourself in a marriage?
That's a great question. So the ways to start to get yourself ready for a relationship and a healthy longevity based relationship is first starting to be able to answer that age old question, who are you?
Right.
And most of us don't really have a good solidified answer to that question until we get to our mid to late 20s. And the reason we don't have that answer is because we're testing out a lot of stuff during that time period to figure out the answer to that. What do we want? What do we like? What do we don't like? Do we want to explore these different avenues of our lives, seeing the world, etc.? And so that comes with exposure, that comes with timing, that comes with different friendships that you would meet along the way. And those are the things that help us figure out who we are. So by that time that we've figured out who we are, then we can make ourselves ready to be with somebody else, because they ask that first question. Usually that's one of the main questions you get when you start dating. So tell me about yourself. And most people are like, what do you want to know? First, knows the answer to that question would say, well, just a little bit about me. I like this. I'm not really into these things. And you see that in the progression of dating. You see that in the progression of when people have dated themselves well enough to answer that question.
And dating so yourself.
You get yourself ready by dating yourself, by going out exploring likes and dislikes. You are no longer subjected to mommy and daddy's opinion of you, or society's opinion of you. You're now only subjected to your opinion of yourself and what image you want to project to the world. And then after you figure out what that is the right time to then bring somebody and attach to that, so that you two can now figure out how you're going to develop the next generation. I think what happens is that a lot of us try to skip through that phase because, you know, we don't do it like a couple months, man, that was a lot of time by myself. All right, so yeah, that's enough. And it's because it's hard. It's hard having those conversations. It's hard sitting and being comfortable being lonely. Most of us don't want to be lonely for a minute. We just want to jump into something so we can feel good.
Yes.
And if you don't get comfortable with yourself, you can never get comfortable with another person. And let me say that. Yes.
Let that marinate in your spirit. I mean,
a bunch of bars and this gems dropping. You don't come with yourself, you can't become another person. What happened, RD, if you date yourself and you don't like certain things?
See, that gives you an opportunity to change it. The worst time is to try to change that when you're already in a relationship with somebody else and then they figure out that thing you don't like, because then they start harping on that thing you don't like already. Butt heads. All the time. And you just like, why are you calling me out in this? You already know it's a problem, but why are you calling me out in this? And I get defensive, and then we're having these unnecessary arguments now. And so we really have to get to a place where if our first mode always is to be defensive, then how are you opening your space for somebody else? Because when you're in a relationship, a person is automatically going to touch or step on your vulnerabilities. That's what it is. You create emotional vulnerabilities with that person because it's intimacy. And so a person you're truly with isn't going to intentionally try to step on the landmine to set a fire. They're going to try to step around it, avoid it at all costs. But if they happen to tap it, know that they're not coming for you. They accidentally did that. And they now are trying to be curious about how do we repair this. So your other mode shouldn't be, oh, defense is up. There's going to be a fight. And so that's the difference of when you know you're ready, because when people now come for you and they offer you constructive criticism, or they offer you another opinion on something, if your first reaction is to always be defensive, you're not as emotionally mature as you think you are. You're not.
Well, just come for me then. Wow. Yes, go ahead. Didn't even send you. She just, I don't even have much judges. She just to come. Go ahead. Okay.
Guys, right. You guys are pretty much eavesdropping on our first session. You only pick up on that.
But no, but it's great though. It needs to be said. And I think a lot of persons need this type of exposure, need to understand what a safe space these type of conversations can be. Right. Honestly. In the comments, we have Dianya Mortimer who says, yeah, I love connect and communicate. And Donovan is saying that this is a masterclass session. And yeah, truly it is. Honestly, it is.
So another question, Don. What can you do if a person, say you're in a relationship already, you mm-hmm. come to find out now that you don't love yourself, how are you supposed to love yourself? How can you now help that person get up to that level to love themselves?
I would almost do it as, I definitely believe in what I call a one down approach, which is I'm going to throw myself under the bus for the betterment of the whole relationship, which means that I'm going to ask you to help me help myself and mirror for you what I want you to do to see if that'll spark something in you to do the same thing for yourself. And I'm going to try that first before I tell you, hey, have you ever thought about this, this, and this? Because if I'm doing that and showing you my vulnerability already and doing that, then it offers me a space where you can see that I'm too interested in being better. And so it doesn't come off as if I am trying to come for you. Because right. again, when we're in relationships, we're in the most vulnerable times of our lives. And the moment we feel an emotional vulnerable threat, we start to already gear up. We put on all that battle gear, those army vests and everything, because you know we go into war and somebody can't get that close to us. Versus if I say to you, hey, I'm really trying to work on me this year. I realized that, you know, to be a better spouse to you, I really need to be more in touch with some of these areas for myself. I'm thinking about working on this. Do you think there's something we can do together? Or do you think it's something you could help me with? What do you think we could do? Maybe this is a project we can work on together as a unit for these next few months to improve our marriage. And so you offer it in a way that doesn't just single the other person out, because no one is ever complete. I always say we're all a work in progress. And if that's an opportunity for both of you to grow, then do it that way versus saying, you really need to work on yourself.
Go figure that out.
Right. Because I don't know why we get used to doing that, because the moment you became a unit, there is no more I.
No.
It's complete partnership. And so if your partner is falling off, and I love to say this, you yourself are falling off. Your partner cannot fall off because y'all falling off. Y'all are a unit. One person, one unit.
You said it earlier, and I that tied into this. I analogize marriage as like a fort that you have to protect. And you said it's us against the world. So if one part of the person who is the fort is diminished, that means us now you're exposed. So like now you're open. And now it's us now. I think that's what you need to know. Help. So it's not necessarily I'm helping Nadia, Nadia's helping me. I like the other side, but if Nadia's up to this spot, that means I'm up to this spot.
Right.
That means we both wouldn't be successful to be a certain means.
Yes.
So that's what I'm doing.
So this one will be the last question out of the chat, guys, as we start to wind down. It's honestly great session. What advice do you give a person who has to diminish themselves or walk on eggshells just to maintain their relationship or marriage?
I don't think I was supposed to do that face. that means that you have a very insecure partner. And if your partner is that insecure that you have to lessen yourself for them to feel good, that is, I'm going to call you out because you're setting up a very bad precedent in the relationship. Because the moment you show anything other than that, the person is going to feel so threatened. And I have to blame you because you set up the relationship where they don't feel like they have anything wrong or anything to work on. And that's not a good place to be at. And if your partner is not open and interested in your view of them, then to me, that's almost a little, I almost want to say jarring, scary, because I am always interested in my partner's view of me because we're a reflection of each other. And so I am always trying to make sure they look good, and they're always trying to make sure I look good, because we're a team, right? Back to this, we have this fort against the world. And yeah, so that person now believes that they are untouchable. No one can say anything to them, that you haven't maybe even said anything to them, or maybe you did at some point, and whatever happened at that place, you then shut down. Now, what I would offer that person to do is to probably try to have another conversation with your partner about maybe some goals for the year.
Okay.
That you guys want to work on together. And maybe one of those goals needs to be that y'all need to go to therapy, because that's what it sounds like. Because what's going to end up happening over a while is that you're going to get tired.
Yeah.
And no one person can make the other person always feel good and not feel drained. And when you start to feel drained like that, then you leave yourself open to vulnerabilities, which means that somebody's going to have to fill your tank. And when somebody starts to fill your tank, it's most likely ain't going to be your partner whose tank you have to constantly be filling, which means you leave yourself pretty vulnerable to threats.
Yeah.
And maybe even just on an emotional level, which is even more scarier sometimes.
Yeah.
And so maybe you need to have a very heartfelt conversation with your partner about the fact that, hey, let's talk about some of our needs in this relationship for this year. Tell me three of your needs and I'll tell you three of mine. And let's see how we can work on these needs together so that we can have longevity. Now, if your partner is not even interested in that, then you might have to have another honest conversation, which is, are they even interested in you? Because maybe they're so selfish that the only reason the relationship works is because you have fed their ego. And that's a very one-sided kind of narcissistic relationship. And that's, after a while, it just gets exhausting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't recommend it, because that's going to start to wear on your self-esteem at some point too, because you're so busy building, but you're depleting you to build the other person up.
Mm.
And okay. Yeah, that's a tough one.
That's what way to go back up.
Yes. So there are, that's the reality of many persons. And so,
you know what's so crazy? That ties into her point with infidelity.
What?
So in terms of infidelity, is not the problem, is not the act itself, but it's the root of the problem. Could be even stuff like that. Mm-hmm. The person is so exhausted trying to build a person up that they are looking, either intentionally or unintentionally, or somebody notices it, because people are out there looking to fill these other people's marriages.
Yes.
And then they see that as a gap, as a void, and that's the way they slip in and they say, you know.
And I'll just say this. This is why most affairs tend to happen at offices. And the reason that is because I spend the majority of my time at the office. I complain to my coworker about what's going on in my life and stuff like that. And maybe I'm the person who's making all the money and doing all the projects at work. And my partner's home and taking care of the kids. But they don't realize, like, I'm so exhausted because I have all these projects to do to make sure our life is successful at home. Well, my partner's home and they're not really interested in that because they're exhausted with the kid. And so the person at work is like, yay, go do good, all this stuff. But my partner is so busy missing that. And those little moments mean so much to me, but they're not getting that. So then that person at work who becomes my confidant then becomes that person who becomes my emotional safety blanket.
Mm.
And it's those little things like that. And I know, honestly, I have to tell couples, it's really a balancing act. And every year I always offer to couples to relook at your plans for the year, because sometimes your plans are so good and they're so drastic. But you also have to see that these plans allow for us to also be a unit. Because I had a couple once, they are so busy about building this house that they got so caught up with all the money and the time and the stuff at the house. But by the time the house was going to be finished, I told them there wasn't going to be anybody in the house because they were so busy on getting the goal done that there was no time togetherness. There was no time as a family unit. And they were starting to be roommates because they were busy on the goal of the house. And I suggested them something so small To me, it was small, but to them, it was like, oh my gosh, we didn't think about it. I was like, why can't we flex out the timeline for the house? So you could do these other things. And they're like, we could do that? And I was like, you kind of made the goal for the house.
Yeah, man. So, I like that.
Yeah. Small little changes sometimes save a whole marriage.
That's why you're the expert.
Right. So, how can you tell our audience how they can reach out to you to further the conversation? Because I think that we touched on so many good points. Of course, I encourage everybody to like play this back, let this marinate in your spirit, think on these things, and just and you know, there are some points there that you really want to explore. So how do they get in contact with you? How do we get in contact with you so that we can continue this conversation?
Sure. You could always, probably the easiest way that has all the information is going to the website, which is www.rpc-ltd.com. It's rpc-ltd.com. That has all the social media stuff, the contact form. If not, as you can see up here on my background, you can give me a call at one of the local numbers. The local one for the Bahamas is 425-0718. Again, it's 425-0718. And so just send me an email or give us a call and we will make sure we'll get to you. Because we all need a little help sometimes. There's a lot to navigate through. And I know a lot of us are dealing with COVID fatigue and just trying to reintegrate into the world. So any way we can help, I'm willing to give you the help.
All right. Awesome. And we just want to say hello to Katie, who was in the chat there. So, don't butcher Katie's last name.
Hello, Katie.
But yeah, so I think I want to say that is pretty much it for our conversation with Dr. E.
Oh,
We appreciate you lending your time to us so much.
Expertise.
And intelligence. Right. Tamika's saying it's a good session. So if Tamika says it's a good session, it was a good session. but we really appreciate you. And the knowledge that you shared was amazing. Yeah. I know you've definitely opened up our eyes and I can't wait to book a session with you, honestly. So yeah, so as you guys know,
this you is the awesome words. I mean, I guess
a real
it's supposed to be a clean stick the landing thing. But,
nope.
Once you know the
5 out of 10.
It has been it's all inspiring, eye opening. This went by extremely quick. And yes. As always, a testament of a great conversation. I would confidently say you are a very intelligent person, as you put it.
Definitely.
You are someone who is every time I hear you speak, it just is amazing, especially when you speak the masterful way you present things and ideas. I enjoy it. I recommend anybody to go see a therapist. Just a fun story. One fun advance we had in our marriage is people always say, go see somebody. You know, so I said, okay, cool. Went to see somebody. Went to a church person. Trying to tell me, well, maybe marriage ain't for you. I said to say, don't just go to anybody. Please go to people who have expertise in the field, because what tends to happen is that you may get the wrong advice, and that might be a total spoken
to you.
Be more destructive than constructive.
Yeah.
So please, like Dottie said, go to the right persons.
Go to Dr. E.
I would say, essentially go to Dr. E. Filter the advice. Make sure it fits you. And more importantly, if you're in a relationship, understand that your partner is a part of you. So do not leave them behind in this emotional group. So it's very important.
Yes. And thank you to Juliana and Shiva for sticking out with us.
Of course, everybody.
And adding their questions. Everybody who submitted questions via the email,
text,
chat, whatever. We appreciate it.
And more importantly, thank you, Dr. D, for being our season on there. And you got us now.
We got to step back in up next season, okay?
Thank you guys so much. It was fun.
So that has been another episode of
Power and Love. Podcast is replayed with me on YouTube, on Facebook, on the audio, be on all streaming platforms. Just look out for that.
Yes.
Thank you guys for tuning in. We appreciate you. We love you. Until next time, we'll see you then.
All right.
This one is called Lover's Choice.